Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Imprint Companion, the podcast that covers the releases from Australia's own boutique Blu-ray label, Imprint Films. My name is Alexa Toliopoulos, and joining me to discuss the first half of this April batch, it is my dear friend Blake Howards.
Hello, Lex. Hello, you physical media freaks with a PH out there. Wow. I mean, the one word that I have to say about Imprint's stunning and like literally like floodwaters, dam bursting levels of physical media is I'm tired. I'm like tired. It is like we are just spoilt for the amount of incredible releases that are coming out at the moment. It's somewhat overwhelming, but it's freaking awesome. And it's awesome to be back chatting with you about it again.
Absolutely. And this is a dense batch. It's a big batch and it's an exciting one. There was a lot of movies I'd been anticipating for quite some time. Some that I was looking forward to physical releases from. And then the biggest one is probably the big surprise. I don't think we'd ever see something as comprehensive to cover a true cult classic movie like The Wicker Man in this way. So this episode we're going to cover some interesting ones. We're going to talk about this big Wicker Man box that contains different cuts of the movie, so many special features. I'm also going to cover what we're calling Godfather adjacent movies, films that popped up in, around, before, straight after The Godfather that are in that same kind of mafioso genre.
Yes, and really what we're also covering is one of the, I guess, rediscoverable neon noir films in Cutter's way, and it would not be an Imprint Companion without a true and genuine surprise, a totally bent police procedural mystery that feels like it's got its fingerprints and tendrils and influences in so many of the things that we watch a little bit later on from Frank Perry's Man on a Swing. We're going to talk about that. But look, Lex, I know I have to do some confessing here. I've never been the gigantic Wicker Man aficionado that I know that you have been, and this box set is an education. It is like, it is multiple cuts, theatrical, directors, final cuts of the film, an entire disc in this big epic three case but four disc batch, including the original soundtrack as well. This gorgeous box that feels, I mean, it's so sexy sitting on your shelves with the white and the red Wicker Man writing. But you have dived more extensively into the Wicker Man thing. I don't feel equipped to do it, so I'm gonna give you the pressure and and the honor of covering this incredible and just fantastic. This is just exactly what Imprint does so well. It's giving you an education about a cult film in its all its comprehensive glory. So talk to me about the Wicker Man box that we're holding in front of us.
I could a tale unfold whose lightest word would harrow up thy soul, freeze thy young blood.
Here to investigate the disappearance of a young girl. Where is Rowan Morrison?
If Rowan Morrison existed, we would know.
I suspect murder.
But Sergeant, I've already
told. In the name of God, woman, what kind of mother are you that can stand by and see your own child slaughtered?
I'm a big fan of the Wicker Man. I've loved it for quite some time. I think I discovered it when I was in film school and starting to like develop my taste in horror, and I started to like, and I don't even know if the kind of language was there for it yet, but I like those occult horror films that we now call folk horror quite a lot. And The Wicker Man is pretty much the, I guess, the crown jewel of what folk horror
definitive folk horror.
Definitive folk horror movie, you know, it's the godfather of folk horror films. It's the one that's known the best. It's the one that's loved the best. It's the one that's kind of crossed over the most, I'd say. There's a few other examples that do, but The Wicker Man is like a known movie. People know the twists of The Wicker Man. People know the iconography of The Wicker Man. People especially know the remake of The Wicker Man for more infamous reasons.
The memification of the remake is cutting through to this very day on Twitter, if you're
absolutely
in film Twitter.
And I would say, like, one of the most unique things about The Wicker Man, which is so evident in this new version, in this lovely restoration, the way it looks so beautiful, is that The Wicker Man is always a surprising movie. It's a daytime, for the most part, set horror film, and it's got this lovely kind of countryside, these haze, these kind of autumny colors that look so beautiful. And I think what always surprises people about The Wicker Man is to learn that it is one of the very few and rare horror musical movies. There's a lot of singing, there's a lot of dancing, there's a lot of like serenading and chanting in The Wicker Man. And I think that's the thing that I got most excited for in this release, was seeing that it also comes with, on a bonus disc, the original soundtrack.
This also, for that, in that original soundtrack disc, there's a whole slipcase that you can see. There are no less than like 11 different special features, including one of the things that we're loving to see very recently, and this also comes on the Final Cut disc itself, is restoration comparison. So comparing previous versions to new versions. You've got like multiple documentaries around counterculture, and this is a great one: Willow's Song, The Liberation of Eve, The Wicker Man, Sexual Revolution, Counterculture, and Satanic Feminism by the great Kat Ellinger, which we love. She's a big the proponent of a lot of some of the most fantastic special features we've seen across Imprint. But it's like multiple documentaries, director's cut audio commentaries and featurettes, songs, promo videos, original soundtracks. That's just on the special features. That's not even on the actual director's cut and the original theatrical cut and then the final cuts. It's a pretty intimidating box.
On that theatrical cut, there's a commentary from film historian Kim Newman and author Sean Hogan. I know Kim Newman is just like one of the great horror minds, so it's perfect to like have that on one of the classic horror films. So there's a lot to dig in here. Like, we had so much to cover on this. I could barely scratch the surface on this Wicker Man release. And it's one that I want to really spend a lot of time with myself and dive back into, because every couple of years I know I need to come back to the Wicker Man. But I think the thing that I can pretty safely say, for now at least, this feels like a truly definitive compendium of all things Wicker Man. And especially, like, I've also got sitting right next to it on my shelf the new Woodlands Dark and Days Bewitched box set of folk horror films from Severin that I just absolutely adore. And this looks so nice sitting next to each other, because that's not included in the box set. So having them right next to each other feels so beautiful and so, like, complete. And, you know, there's always this kind of tension, I'd say, with 4K now. Like, you know, there's a whole new physical medium where you're like, okay, are the things I've got definitive anymore if there's already this new thing? For a film like The Wicker Man, I cannot imagine a box, there'll be anything better than this box set. Maybe one day, who knows, in a few years' time, there will be a 4K release of the film. But if you're like a true Wicker Man fan, I think you'd be hard pressed to not pick this up and have like all the goodies and like how great this box set feels and looks, but with how complete it feels. You know, if they make another copy of the movie, you're going to freaking double dip one day for the cut of the movie, the 4K version. But with these kind of movies as well, like Wicker Man, you never know when that can be. Like, that could not happen. And in Australia, it took a long time for us to even get any cuts of The Wicker Man on Blu-ray. And to now have all three is very, very special. Very, very cool. This was such a surprise to see it come. And I think that it's one of the coolest imprint releases, easily, for me.
Yeah, it's right up there. And I think one of the things that we always want to say as well is we're so stoked that this is an Australian boutique Blu-ray label that's doing the Lord's work, but it is not region locked. So if you are listening to this in the United States, you can get your hot little hands on it. I understand that sometimes it's a real challenge to decide to pick a whole batch and to drop in. And we do our best to cover on Imprint Companion, like those batches that are absolutely essential top to bottom. But, you know, if you are a cult, and especially a cult and folk horror fan, this is already a must buy, but it is absolutely an essential acquisition. Spend the shipping, do what you need to do, get it in, and then if some of the other things in the batch sort of help us, if we can sway you to them or why this batch is great, definitely do that. But like I think just right at the top, this is something that is worthy of much time, much poring over, and just like literally taking your time to go through everything. Because if you're an obsessive, it should really quench your thirst.
I would say it is quite a high price point, you know, but you are getting so much with it. That's what I think. That's kind of like what you have to weigh up with a release like this, where, you know, you can go in your head, oh, it's just one movie, but it's so packed to the brim. There's three different cuts of the movie. If you're an obsessive, it's easy to go for that price point. I feel like it maybe if you're being introduced to The Wicker Man, if you don't already have that love for it, maybe that's quite a high price point to jump into. Yeah. But I say keep it on your radar when sales come up. You know, JB Hi-Fi in Australia always ends up having like 30% off DVDs and Blu-rays, 20% off DVDs and Blu-rays here and there. Keep it on your radar. If you're buying into it for the first time, maybe it's better to wait for a sale. But if you're a Wicker Man fan, it's hard to pass it up. That's all I can say. I think it's a really great release.
All right, well, let's dive from The Wicker Man. We've had that very extensive box set. It's so great. Lex is the cult horror aficionado out of the two of us, and he gives it the emphatic thumbs up. But let's go to what is a really great Godfather-adjacent trilogy of movies starting from 1968 through to 1973, the first of which is The Brotherhood, starring Kirk Douglas, the second of which a New York stone-cold Fun City classic across 110th Street, which kind of blends police drama and blaxploitation right at a very interesting time. And another across 110th Street, which is an Anthony Quinn joint, another Anthony Quinn joint in The Don Is Dead, right hot on the heels of Francis Ford Coppola's The Godfather, even has some of the stars in that. Let's kick off with 1968's The Brotherhood. And if you haven't seen this, essentially, the son of a powerful mafia don comes home from army service in Vietnam. He wants to lead his own life, but family tradition and power, you know, basically, and some power plays involving his brother lead him to find himself being drawn back into the world.
Janetta Brothers. What's better than that?
Nothing.
You're damn right. I need you, Vince. Honest to God, I really need you.
Well, a mama, a family, is always a lie. I capito?
Don't tell me anything, Vince. That's the only way I can do it.
Hey, speak English, will you? This is America.
I talk like I want, and you don't say nothing. I tell you, this ain't gonna work.
You know, the government ain't gonna just sit around and let you stick them where it hurts the most.
That sounds so familiar. Someone who was a war veteran who comes back and has to forcibly join his family business.
Yeah, and begrudgingly, in fact, has to join his family.
Because of a situation with his brother, has to step in and take over? What the...
And his brother is played by a gruff hothead? You know, it doesn't sound familiar at all. The Brotherhood, first and foremost, besides the sexiness of the Wicker Man box set, the poster art on the slipcase of The Brotherhood is maybe the best art of any of the releases that we're seeing. Listen, outside Absolutely. The quality of the film, it is so hot. Lex and I rarely will text each other. I mean, we always text each other about this.
Rarely text each other. I think we text each other every single day.
Every day. No, but I mean, rarely text each other about the physical slipcases. But like, I just remember your text coming through like, dude, the Brotherhood slipcase is so hot. And I'm like, yes, I 100% agree with you. But this was a really interesting one because it is a very... It's a very transitional movie, Lex. I found it that way myself watching it.
It's a notorious movie, right? Like, you're a big Godfather fan like myself.
Unbelievable.
You've known about this movie your whole life because it's all the movie that almost got the Godfather to not be made.
Yes. And you watch it and it has scenes that are set in Italy. It has Italian-speaking mafiosa. It has these tensions being made. And it's like, does this just feel like... kind of exactly what Puzo was going for. The difference is, though, is that while The Godfather kind of makes a kind of definitive and almost Shakespearean elevation of a family story, what probably keeps this so different and unique, even though they're playing in the same, I guess they're playing in the same sandbox, is that it's very, very intimate. It feels very close. It feels like there's no other larger world, or it doesn't at least feel like that for me watching it, that there was a larger world as much on the outside of it. This is, it's a Martin Ritt film. And so you've got someone who's obviously not an Italian-American making it. You've got Kirk Douglas in the lead role who also produced the film. He's like sort of the Don character, the brother character. And he's, you know, it's an interesting dynamic, but it felt very confined to me, Lex, the Brotherhood. It felt like that story, but like from... where all of the other parts, the ephemera that make The Godfather so unique, of the family and the actual culture, that felt like just secondary. It was like the deep background, not brought to the foreground like Coppola does with The Godfather trilogy.
It's certainly not a rich movie any kind of way. It's a fascinating curiosity because, like you said, it's a film at the forefront of change. And when I say forefront, I mean like beforefront. Like this does not feel... at all.
Prelude to change.
Exactly. It does not feel like a contemporary of The Godfather at all. It barely even feels like, you know, the classic gangster films of like the 30s and 40s. They're all about that rip from the headlines type deal. This just feels like an exercise in, I guess... you have to make a movie based on something. I can't even say it's an exercise in genre, but it's a fascinating curio nonetheless.
Yeah, it feels like a Western. It feels like a Western morality tale that's setting itself inside a mafia family, as opposed to a rich baron who owns land, as opposed to, you know, a lawmakers and, you know, someone's come back from a war or something like that. It definitely feels like more of a Western morality tale that has been fused with these, you know, overarching sort of underworld themes, but it doesn't care as much about the underworld themes as much as it does about the moral quandary of it all. And and that's not to say that doesn't work. You know, the terrific John Hillcoat Australian Western, The Proposition, takes a deeply elemental story about, like, you know, trading an innocent for a maniac, and it just happens to be a family and set alongside this frontier Australia that gives us a different perspective on, I guess, you know, the Australian story as far as colonization and those sorts of things. And that's a deeply elemental story, and deeply, you know, fits in with these sort of Western themes of the genre. But this doesn't feel like it actually knows what it's doing. It's like, oh, well, we've played with mafia stories before. How can we use this as a bit of set dressing? It's just a bit of costume cosplaying of mafia stuff. And, you know, Kirk Douglas is definitely trying something. He's speaking in another language. They're trying to show a little bit off of the culture, but it just feels so forced and it doesn't feel authentic at all. And that's probably why, you know, when The Godfather comes along, it feels like it's satiating you. It's quenching a thirst that you didn't know you realized you had. And movies like The Brotherhood, are there to kind of lead you, I think, to The Godfather, but they don't make you want to go back.
There's an interesting special feature on here called The Kiss of Death, Paramount and the Brotherhood, which is like a video essay worth getting into because it's talking about a lot of the things that we're talking about, like the historical nature of this film and why it has kind of a weirdly significant part in history and why it kind of pops up in the history books. The other film in this, more contemporary to the Godfather mafioso movies, is one that had been on my radar for a couple of years, The Don Is Dead.
I don't care who killed who. I want to know how this whole mess got started.
Where do you want to begin?
Frankie?
What?
Your father.
Tell me!
Apollo's dead.
Frankie is Don Apollo's only living son. And it seems only reasonable that he should inherit his family's responsibilities.
Frank
is not ready yet. But he will be. When that time comes, you'll inherit my organization.
There was an overseas Blu-ray release that I had like in my cart since it was like a pre-order, but I never picked it up, thankfully, so I could get the imprint one anyway. But that one stood out to me, something very interesting because, you know, it's Anthony Quinn, one of my favorites. It's one Robert Forster, one of my favorites. And I had always been, I'd been curious about it because it's just after The Godfather and it's got some of the same cast. I know that is
Aletieri.
Aletieri's in both. Yeah, I was going to say Abe Vigoda, but Abe Vigoda's in another one, right?
No, Abe Vigoda's in both too. He's Abe Vigoda and Aletieri.
Yeah.
And Anthony Quinn, who not a lot of people realize, also was famous on stage for playing, you know, playing in Streetcar Named Desire, which Brando made famous on the stage and then eventually in the cinema screen. And so it was kind of very much like, oh, we've got to, if we're going to make a movie like this, we definitely have to, you know, find a way to get a lot of that Godfather flavor if we can. Even Robert Forster feels like a very James Caan, Sonny Corleone kind of choice. Big time. I mean, it's young Robert Forster. He's almost unrecognizable. You're like, holy shit, is that... He's so young. Like, I've always thought of him as 50 years old. Like, it's a very different Robert Forster than the one that you might have in your head if you're a huge fan of Jackie Brown. But
it's before he gets those hair plugs that he's famous for in, like, the 80s and stuff. I've just watched Alligator, and they even joke about his hair plugs in the movie.
He was just pre-hair plugs. But now this, if we're talking about the Brotherhood, you know, being basically a Western morality tale, this is... unfortunately, as far as its quality, it's a great curio to own because for us and for people who are fans of the things like The Godfather, you've heard about this damn movie your whole life and it's been really hard to acquire and you want it to actually say, well, what's going on here? Like, it's got some great actors, what's going on? But it is exactly the thing, I guess, that everyone feared that The Godfather would be, which is that a Jewish director and a bunch of non-Italian-American writers who have adapted the film, because it was Christopher Trumbo adapted it with Michael Butler, and you've got this very sunny, light, brightly lit, you know, kind of semi-Vegas set, very old classic. Like, it feels like a total throwback, and it feels like it's not even made in the same decade as The Godfather. Mm.
It feels more like a Euro crime thriller than a mafia or gangster movie. Like, it feels like those Italian Euro crime thrillers from like the 60s and early 70s and stuff, rather than the excitement or the grit or the authenticity that we know from gangster movies before this and after this. But I gotta tell you, there's one moment that really stood out to me. There is a truly freaking hectic car explosion in this movie that knocked me out. It felt so powerful and violent. It straight up disappears the guy that's there. Like, it's the explosion happens and he's just no longer there at all. He just fully disappears. And the way that that's set up, I thought was such a thrilling sequence. I love that sequence. And it kind of made me appreciate like how good this movie does look. Like, it's got a great 70s look, this kind of clean 70s vibe. It's so different to what I would want from one of these movies, but I still quite liked it. I don't think I loved this movie, but there was enough curiosity there for me versus The Brotherhood, which is a movie I knew more about and had seen already. I think I saw The Brotherhood like so long ago now. But this one had offered me a little bit more. And I guess it's just because I love freaking Anthony Quinn. I love Ava Goda. I love Al Lettieri. I love Victor Argo. There's so many guys. And Robert Forster. You know, it's hard to get sick of him on screen. So this
yeah, is... My other favorite moment, which is not explosive, was just seeing the mediated discussions about how they were divvying up different patches of the mafia's sort of turf between different people, and watching all these very cordial discussions that you know are kind of loaded with betrayal. I think that's actually the very best that the Don is at, is for me, is those conversations where they're all very much cordial and they're agreeing to things, but you can just feel like... this is all so tenuous, it's all going to go to hell. And I think that that's probably the best. The anticipation and when the movie's conveying what it's doing rather than actually saying and executing what it does, like those anticipation moments for me were like big highlights. I was like, oh my God, this is going to be amazing. And it just never quite lived up to the hype of all those actors and all those things for me. But again, If you're a student of the University of Cinephile, as Lexi is an honorary lecturer if you are that, then this is something that if you've been a fan of things like The Godfather, you kind of like, you need to, these are the blind spots you need to inform an entire genre. Like I love finding these movies that just didn't work in the wake of these massive genre breakers. It's really interesting.
The next film in this kind of mafioso cycle that we're discussing comes from 1972, the same year The Godfather came out. And this one is actually, I would say, a bit more of an iconic classic. It offers quite a few surprises, but the movie is Barry Shear's Across 110th Street.
We had an okay week.
You hear me good? We're out $300,000. Now what do we do?
I've been in charge here 15 years, and nobody tells me how to run my business.
I ain't giving nothing back. You
doing whatever one I have to do to survive.
Why would your hands up?
Stand up, you shining bastard! I'll show you how old I am!
This is a cop versus gang versus gang versus heist versus robbers movie. I hadn't seen it for quite a few years. I'd actually picked up the Kino Lorber Blu-ray at the very start of the pandemic because I had like a hankering to watch it. And I don't think I ever got to it until this one finally came around. And I tell you what surprised me most, Blake, because it had been a long time since I saw it. I listen to Across 110th Street, the Curtis Mayfield song, a lot. Like, it's in a few of my playlists. It's a go-to song for me. You know, when I host movie trivia at Golden Age Cinema, it's in the playlist. I couldn't believe when this movie started that it was a different version of that song that I had no memory of.
It's not the radio release of the track. It's a completely different version of the song.
It's stripped down and barely there.
Yeah. It's like that juiced up version. It's like the version you can't quite quench. If you do like the movie version that is more stripped down because you identify it with the movie, it's not the one that you hear all the time. No, it's awesome.
Yeah, so I hadn't seen this movie for a long time. Do you know what I really appreciated as well was the structure? I think this is such an interestingly structured film where it starts with like this bungled heist that shouldn't have ever happened. And then I find it so interesting the way that we cut around to the different storylines. Then when we start aligning with different characters, for the most part, we're following Anthony Quinn and Yaphet Kotto as like these cops almost in the heat of the night style trying to track these bungled burglars down. And I found the structure to be really fascinating this time. Like, it kept me gripped in really interesting ways. And the ending, oh my God, I forgot the ending. It is a bit of an all-timer.
Yeah, absolutely an all-timer. And I would just say, and this is with the greatest respect, in the heat of the night, the tension that is between Yaphet Kotto and Anthony Quinn for me, because I think Sidney Poitier is doing basically all the heavy lifting as Tibbs in the Heat of the Night. And Rod Steiger, for me, is someone who just feels like he's dwarfed by how much charisma and how amazing Poitier is. Whereas Yaphet Kotto and Anthony Quinn, their dynamic of two different legacies of how to police and how to be a guardian of a community and how to think about innocence rather than this kind of like inherent tribalism. Holy shit, their chemistry and their tension and the way that the chemistry, the alchemical thing that they bounce off each other. I'm completely blown away by this movie. I watched it very recently too. I streamed it. It was on the Criterion Channel for a little bit. It was in that great New York compendium of films, a whole bunch of New York stories that were together. I watched it then. I was like blown away. And again, with the greatest respect to our streaming pals, streaming sucks and it's never as great quality as Blu-ray. So like checking this out on Blu-ray and having this beautiful, clear, you know, completely upscaled 1080p high definition presentation that was acquired from MGM. I was just like, it looks amazing. It feels amazing. The textures of the city are all there. It's got this very verite kind of new, you know, Italian neo-realist, you know, but supplanted into New York City view. This has got all the anger and the hard edges of blaxploitation, but it's in like a really glitzy, big money production, and it just works in spades. I would say it's that, with including of that ending, this is an essential movie. Like, so when I saw this on the list, I was like, oh my God, this is such a great acquisition. This is this would have been a Blake movie without being an imprint movie. I would have had to have had any copy I could have got my hands on of this movie.
Yeah, I agree. This is a cool one. I'm glad that we got to revisit it. I think that you're right. Like, it's a bit of, like, if you're a crime fan, if you love stuff like The French Connection, I feel like this is
totally
one that's like really worth catching up with, because it kind of can be a bit elusive here in Australia. I know that it was on Stan for a little while, but across 110th Street, it's a banger and it continues to surprise.
French Connection, 1971. Across 110th Street, 1972. We just talked about the Golden Age. That's a double. Isn't that a double feature? Let's get that double feature happening. Let's throw that into the universe. Yeah. Two things I want to shout out as part of the Blu-ray. Firstly, Matthew Asprey-Gear, who's been a guest on the show talking The Gambler previously. He did a terrific commentary for The Gambler, which is another great imprint release way back, it feels now. Has also done the commentary track here, done another outstanding job, a very great historical perspective on everything happening in the production and the significance of all the players and especially the time that it was produced. And because Anthony Quinn's your guy and I knew that he was, there's a terrific doco on here from 1990 called Anthony Quinn and Original, which really documents his career and just shows off his absolutely, I mean, just fascinating, incredible, rich, diverse career. And it's a documentary that I watched and I just smiled from ear to ear while I was watching it. It was such a great treat after watching 110th Street, which is a very tense experience.
Yeah.
And then just like getting to just like, just smile at Anthony Quinn, like one of the coolest actors ever lived. And just, he just lives up to the hype of just being a scallywag and just being a charmer.
I've totally seen this documentary years ago on like the classic movie channel on cable. Because I was a big Anthony Quinn guy, I remember my grandma and I watching that doco together. And I think that's when I fell in love with him, where I was like, because I knew him as Zorba the Greek or whatever. But then seeing like some of the other movies that he was in, I became a big fan of a Kirk Douglas movie, Lust for Life, that stars Anthony Quinn and Kirk Douglas plays Vincent van Gogh. I always loved that movie. That's how I discovered it, was from that documentary.
Well, now that we've done our Godfather adjacent trilogy, I want to read you a little passage from a website called Secret Handshake, which do some incredible podcasts and catalogs of sort of these movies that are on the fringes. It's a passage written by a dear friend of mine and a friend of everything that we do at One Heat Minute Productions, Travis Woods, who has written one of the definitive essays about this film. He writes on Secret Handshake about Cutter's Way, and I'm going to read you this passage. Adapted from director Ivan Passer, screenwriter Jeffrey Friskin, from Newton Thorberg's 1976 Vietnam hangover novel Cutter and Bone, Cutter's Way isn't a buddy comedy, even though its lead characters are fitfully buddies and wickedly funny. It isn't a detective movie either, even though Cutter obsessively investigates the death of a Santa Barbara teenager. It isn't a mystery, even though the mystery of the killer's identity drives the film's bleak plot to its devastating gunshot of an ending. Holy shit. Cutter's Way really, truly was something that I had not seen, something that I'd heard so much about. This film starring Jeff Bridges, John Hurd, Lisa Eichhorn, Stephen Elliott, Nina Van Pallant, Anne Dusenberry, and Chris Noth, directed by Ivan Pasar. Holy shit, Alex. I was just blown away by the damn ambiguity and ugliness of Cutter's Way. It was such a special movie for me.
Waiting on a tax return? Hopefully it ends up in your hands. Fraudulent tax returns due to identity theft increased by 30% in 2023. If you're in a bind this tax season, LifeLock can help. Our U.S.-based restoration specialists are experts dedicated to helping solve your identity theft issues. And all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package. So we'll reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. Help protect your information this tax season with LifeLock. Save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/aware.
This clown enough to cover any damage. You'll get it back in a couple hours. Come on.
Introducing Alex Cutter.
Hey, Alex, how do I look?
Hey, you look like a fat man on a horse, Georgie.
Huh?
Black's rich.
Cutter's wife, Mo.
The Richard Boone fan club is now complete. This, for instance, is a tomato.
Food, huh? Yeah, I remember food. People used to have to eat it during the Prohibition, didn't they? Occasionally for days on end.
Cutter's best friend.
My charger's got a bad battery, but will I do?
Oh, no, you're too old.
Richard Boone.
This is my pick of the whole batch as well. Like, you know, put Wicker Man aside. That's a classic. It's one of my favorites. Put it aside. This was a huge surprise for me. I don't think I'd ever even freaking heard of it, Blake. First time I heard of it was it being announced and you going like, oh, Cutter's Way. That's a good one. My friend Travis has a great essay about it. So I just went through the whole experience once again, reliving it all. And I freaking loved this movie. I watched it with my mom last weekend because I know that she loves Jeff Bridges and she loves like these kind of like 70s neo-noirs. And this just being post 70s, 1981, its heart is in that American new wave, especially it's a European filmmaker, right? Coming over to America. That feels so American new wave. Like it's like Milos Forman type stuff. And I love this movie. To me, it's now an essential neo-noir film, and it is all on those dual performances of Jeff Bridges, who we love. He's a movie star. He's one of the best. But John Hurd, who we mainly know from Home Alone as the dad from Home Alone, or as that like corrupt cop in The Sopranos.
My favorite, the guy who gets killed by hot Stanley Tucci in The Pelican Brief. Like just some random dude. And in this, his role is Alex Cutter, the Vietnam vet, the eye patch wearing, stumbling, injured, just absolute scallywag Vietnam vet, whose investigation basically leads, as that snippet said, to the devastating end of this movie. I was just like, where is this John Hurd? Like, where has he been all our lives?
He truly like embodies like this very rich, transformative characterization in this film. He's unrecognizable. He's unrecognizable as a character. You like, this is like a living guy on this film. Like
They found a guy in a bar and got him to do this role. It's like
truly
insane.
It's like those early kind of Dustin Hoffman performances, like, you know, Ratso and Midnight Cowboy. But to me, kind of pushes that bar even further than like Dusty ever really could. I think that he is just fantastic. And I tell you what I think really kills it for this one. For me, what I really loved is I love it when noir gets emotional. And this is like, this movie is very slow to find the emotions, but once it does, you're sunken in. This is like a real deep feeling movie. And like you said, that ending is a ripper for all the ages. Like that is an unbelievable, exciting ending where it's like the emotion and the noir meet together to like have this real consequential finale. This is really fantastic. And we're talking so much about that John Hurt performance. There's a bonus feature on here that is wicked, man. Like, it's truly fantastic. It is introduction by Jeff Bridges. And Jeff Bridges filmed now, like, for this release.
2022,
Introducing this movie. And the reason he did it was because he loves John Hurt's performance so much that he wanted to honor his, like, you know, rest in peace, his great friend that's no longer with us, by introducing this movie. And I think it is so cool. It would be up there with, like, even though it's so small, it's like a snippet, it would be up there with my favorite special features across the imprint board for, like, the pure-hearted emotion of Bridges coming back to introduce it because he loves that role and that performance from his friend so much.
And can I just say, your filmmaking impulse is on show again. EMI originally backed the film to be made, to be directed by Robert Mulligan, with Dustin Hoffman to star as Alex Cutter.
Before it eventually, sense, right?
You're so right. It's like this transformative Ratso Rizzo-esque. They're like, yeah, we can get a guy who can get to these depths. And I just think that's what's even, I don't know, it's like scary good about John Hurt's performance, is that it's so out of left field. Like, if you don't have an eye for this guy and you're not familiar with him, and I guess, you know, Home Alone, if we didn't say Home Alone, you watch Cutter's Way, it would probably infuriate the living shit out of you watching it, going, who the hell is this guy?
I know, like, this guy's face. Who is he?
I know his face. Who is he? And yeah, it's a terrific movie. It completely flopped at United States box office. And one of the things I think is fascinating, which I love, we've just been talking about movies that have that hangover from the American New Wave. I love movies that are made in like the 80s and early, especially the early 80s, like 81, 82, because some of them you can feel they've been starting to be produced in the late 70s, and they carry that ethos. They carry this fundamental existential crisis. They carry this fundamental distrust. They carry this, you know, inherent corruption. And it really has a real kinship with, you know, other movies that I love, especially Paul Thomas Anderson's Inherent Vice, which is very much a movie that lives in this kind of world.
Yeah.
And it's a really stunning movie. It's not long. It flies by. And as Lex said, there's a while where it kind of holds you at arm's length. And before you know it, when it sneaks up on you, it has its hooks in you. It's just a special movie, top to bottom. And you know, I'll definitely link Travis's terrific essay at Secret Handshake for you guys to read it, because it's just really special. He's a special writer and he has a special relationship with this movie. You'll hear him coming up on one of the imprint commentaries, which we're going to be covering in next month's Epic Batch.
Before we move on, Blake, can I say something about Cutter's Way that I feel very strongly about? And it's like, something you were saying, especially with Travis and his relationship with this movie, is this is a movie that I can very safely say, seeing it now, my relationship with this movie has just begun. Like, this is one that's going to stick around for me. This is one I'm going to revisit a lot. And it's a very rare thing where you find a new film, or new to you film rather, where you just know, it's like, oh, I've got a relationship with this movie. It's just starting. And I really think I'm going to grow more strongly fond of this movie, more deeply in love with this movie. It's something really, really special. This is probably up there with like the films I'm most grateful for Imprint introducing me to.
Last and certainly not least in this batch that we're going to deep dive on, we have to talk about a 1974 thriller directed by Frank Perry. And if you don't immediately know that name, Frank Perry is the incredible filmmaker who worked in partnership with his wife for many, many movies. And I'm just going to go through that before I talk about his wife, Eleanor.
It's a great filmography.
Movies like The Swimmer, you know, such a deeply influential movie. So many people have said sort of poking fun in a nice way, going, you could watch all six seasons of Mad Men or you could watch The Swimmer and you eventually have the exact same experience. Another movie that's been written about so profoundly, Diary of a Mad Housewife. He's been Academy Award nominated for his independent film, David and Lisa. And this film from 1974 is a thriller. It's about a small town police chief who's investigating a murder, and he gets offered help from a self-described psychic. And as he's building this relationship with this clairvoyant, it starts to become very ambivalent and very strange and tenuous, because he starts to wonder, is this person simply posing as a clairvoyant and they're the killer, or are they a genuine clairvoyant? The movie we're talking about is Man on a Swing. It stars Cliff Robinson and Joel Grey.
I knew it was Maggie's car. And something really seemed spooky about it. Sitting there, empty in the sun.
I got sort of a nutty call on hold, Chief.
Who is that?
The guy says he's a clairvoyant. Says he wanted to help us solve the case.
I'm Franklin Wills. The bruise marks are around the neck, but they don't go... They're not all the way around the victim's neck.
Hey!
I'll kill you, Wills. You son of a bitch, I'll kill you.
Why don't we all go to a seance and let Margaret Dawson...
Man, oh man, I had such... And there's another Layla Schifrin score where there's a few movies with Layla Schifrin scores here. But I was just like, I watched this and I remember texting you almost immediately. And I was like, Lex, I may have found the batch. I may have found a batch winner. This is before we both encountered Cutter's Way in a full experience. But I was like, I think I found my survival... I think I found my pick of the batch as far as the surprise of the batch this month. I had such a good time in Man on a Swing. What about you?
Oh man, I really enjoyed this. The first half hour especially, fascinating, so interestingly shot. Like I was kind of kept on the edge of my seat just with like the shot selection and like the structure of the shots and how the story unfolds visually. The first shot of this movie during the opening credits is one long extended take of a camera strapped to the top of a police car as it rips towards a crime scene. And it feels so real and so dangerous and so exciting. From that moment, I was like, this is a special movie. This is an interesting movie. It's such an interesting, unique take on a procedural, because it's almost like the crime stops being investigated at a certain point and it starts being like about the investigation itself and the consequences of the investigation. And Joel Grey playing this, I think it's a wicked performance as this clairvoyance. It's really interesting. And there's a great bonus feature on here, which is a new, for this release, interview with Joel Grey reminiscing and talking about this performance. And it's so wild because it's left quite ambiguous in this as to whether he is someone who has committed these crimes or if he's a genuine clairvoyant. It's left in the realms of, you know, maybe ambiguous is the wrong word, but it doesn't, you don't have clear-cut answers all the way down. And I think this is a really weird, this is a really weird one. If you're a police procedural fan, you'll get a lot of how freaking wacky and strange this is, because it's like for a lot of it feels quite straight up and down, like a cool police procedural with some interesting stylistic touches. But then it just kind of transforms into something else where like Clint even goes freaking psycho in this. Like he's a bizarre actor to me. I'm always drawn to him because I'm like, man, this guy looks like a million years old always. And then he's like 10 billion years old in like freaking Spider-Man. And there's also a great video essay.
The Show Must Go On, the Frank Perry and the Framing American Dreamland. This is an essay by Howard S. Berger and Kevin Marr. This is one of the best documents I think I've ever seen put together as a video essay. It is absolutely fantastic. It goes through the entire career of Frank Perry. It talks about this as the very tippity top, the mountaintop of everything that he ever does. It talks about The Swimmer. It talks about everything that he does with Mommy Dearest, which is a couple of years later. And
it is I like Mommy Dearest as well. It's a fun movie.
Fun movie. Fantastic story about Frank Perry as a director, about his relationship with his wife, about everything that led to him being a personality in cinema, an incredibly interesting and diverse filmography too. But just the way that this unfolds, I was like, this is, as a person who writes a lot of film criticism and produces a lot of kind of like independent documentary style unpackings of films and filmographies, holy heck, I was so impressed by that. I was just like, this is really terrific. The choices of the footage, the particular pacing, I was just like, it was such a transfixing experience, so suitable for this movie. And the fact that they positioned this, you know, this hidden genre piece in a very, you know, classic sort of Andrew Saris way of like, the genre movie is the one that has all of those ingredients that he was stretching out when he had more freedom, but has to be more confined and controlled with. It just blew me away. It made me have a whole new appreciation for what he does with this. And it's not necessarily, you know, his most well-known movie. If you look at the career of Frank Perry, it's Mommy Dearest, it's David and Lisa, it's Last Summer, it's The Swimmer, it's Truman Capote's trilogy, which we adapted in 69. So it's all these other things. But Man on a Swing was just like, it feels like every single contemporary procedural is reaching for the Mommy Swing. Like they're trying to they're trying to play their whole TV series like this all the time.
There's even one episode of Law and Order SVU that is very much, I think it would have to be based on the same true crime story that the book and then in turn this movie were based on. And it's got Martin Short in the role of the clairvoyant. It's up there with my favorite SVU episodes. That I'm obviously an obsessive of that stupid show. that is well worth catching up with, especially if you've seen this and you want a little something extra. There's also a Frank Perry movie that I would love to recommend that I caught up with this year as well. I bought the Fun City Cinema Blu-ray of Rancho Deluxe, which is Jeff Bridges and Sam Waterston, also Law and Order alumni Sam Waterston in that. That's a really cool, fun movie. Frank Perry is slowly becoming someone that I'm very fascinated by.
Well, look, that is going to have to do us for this epic April imprint companion. We have probably an even more epic May coming up shortly.
I would say undoubtedly more. I think it could be the biggest batch. We've got that neo-noir box set that we're in doing commentary for Twilight. And
yes,
dude, straight up, my most anticipated Blu-ray release maybe of all time, because I've desperately wanted it since the format began, which is a big-ass box of The Warriors with the actual theatrical freaking cut on physical freaking media. I have dreamed of it. The Warriors director's cut was one of my first 10 Blu-rays that I bought, and I've been pissed off ever since that we don't have the theatrical cut.
Well, the theatrical cut is there. It's got a commentary track by the great Walter Chaw, who's a friend of ours. He's just such a terrific writer who's pretty much the primo Walter Hill expert on Earth. There is so many other great stuff in the After Dark neo-noir collection. Obviously, After Dark, My Sweet Rush, One False Move, Mortal Thoughts, Flesh and Bone, including also Twilight, where Alexi and I feature with our commentary track, The Contender and Bloody Sunday. It's a massive May batch. And then just...
It's huge. Dude, Blake, can I tell you? I actually watched The Contender today because I got my test discs. Ooh. Oh, man. I can't wait to hear freaking your thoughts on it, because it's very much inspired by Friedkin, Pakula, and Frankenheimer.
Well, and then we go back to some epics after that. We then go into the June batch, which is Barabbas. Again, we've got some Anthony Quinn there. We've got Barabbas. We've got Julius Caesar, The Nelson Affair, A Night to Remember, Damn the Defiant, The Long Ships. And for someone who's starting a project called Podcaster and Commander, a few Long Ships movies, a few classic nautical tales, something I'm keen to catch up with. But man, it's been great chatting to you again.
Likewise.
This is always fun. Always fun. Where can people hear your good self down in the pod waves right now?
Check out Total Reboot. We just kicked off a new mini series about heist movies. Right now, sitting in front of me, I'm talking to one of the great experts of heist movies, who I'm sure will be popping up at least one time on that mini series. We've got episodes talking about Ocean's 11, 12, and 13, a big trilogy episode out right now. It's a classic re-release of probably one of my favorite episodes ever of Total Reboot, putting that back out for new listeners. And also, this week we got Dog Day Afternoon, the iconic dropping right for you.
I can't wait to hear it, because in your last episode on Oceans 11 through 13, you talked about a school trip to Canberra and your teachers showing Dog Day Afternoon on a school bus and you being smashed to oblivion from your peers about loving that movie, and you just realizing it maybe wasn't the best bus movie to travel between the capital.
Threw me under that bus, dude, putting on my DVD copy of freaking Dog Day Afternoon for all to watch. You're like, yeah, he's cool, you're gonna like this movie. And I'm like, god damn it, I'm bombed with Dog Day Afternoon.
Well, if you guys are listening to this, you may be listening to Imprint Companion in its own feed, or if you're listening in One Hit Minute Productions. Currently right now, in One Hit Minute Productions, we've got a Blues Brothers with Lex and I covering other physical media released around Australia and the globe. So we're going to be talking on there. You can hear Miami Nice and our special mini-series Tokyo Nice covering all the episodes of the latest HBO Max series Tokyo Vice. We're going to have some other guests coming up on that. That's where you can hear from me. And right now I'm just tinkering. I'm putting together our next extended series, but these things take a lot of work and a lot of time. So it's not immediately ready to go as yet, but we are working on that, because we may just be waiting for one very lucky Jack to make his availability ready before we can set sail on this thing. So a series called Podcaster and Commander, already featuring the only interview with Peter Weir on any podcast ever, we're pretty excitedly getting that ready to go.
Absolutely. Guys, thank you for joining us on our celebration of the discs, of physical media, of imprint films on Imprint Companion. Until next time, enjoy media in all of its forms.
Hi, this is Blake Howard, host and producer of One Heat Minute Productions podcast. We dive into the great and underappreciated cinematic works, often one minute or one scene at a time. Our crew of guests are some of the most wonderful filmmakers, writers, authors, and critics ever assembled. Our shows include One Heat Minute, Josie and the Podcats, All the President's Minutes, Increment Vice, and right now, Zodiac Chronicle. Check out oneheatminute.com or find us wherever you get your podcasts.